in this lecture we're just going to take a few examples. If you want to get good marks in exam questions, you not only have to answer the question obviously correctly, but we're also looking for examples, preferably examples that haven't been lectured, but you can also include examples that are lectured, obviously, or there'd be no point in lecturing you, would there? And there should be some criticism, you know, some evidence for thought, some treatment of errors. So we're looking for a number of elements, and examples is one of them. So we're going to take a rift valley, an ore body, an ore field, a salt dome, and an active volcano, which the department has done quite a lot of research in. We currently have a graduate student doing a PhD on this volcano. So starting off with the rift valley, this is Owens Valley, which is in the western United States. Some geologists think that this is a future plate boundary. It's a very deep, subsiding, normal fault-bounded valley. And it's quite an interesting place because this is where the water wars of the West that are popularized in Western movies were kind of played out. So, you know, a lot of movies involve somebody stealing somebody else's water rights, and it was really here in Owens Valley that this kind of thing was going on, because Los Angeles doesn't have any significant water supply of its own, and in the 19th century people realised that it couldn't grow to more than a big town really unless it had a good water supply. And there was a river in Owens Valley, and the chief engineer of Los Angeles sent people up to Owens Valley pretending to be farmers and buying plots of land from the local people, pretending that they were going to farm it, when in fact they were trying to get as much land as possible so that they could build a big aqueduct and pipe all the water to Los Angeles. And this is what they did in the end, and there are various things going on, like the aqueduct being blown up on one occasion by angry locals because they took all the water, so the water table dropped around about, people couldn't water their fields, and the whole place just basically turned into a desert. This dust storm here, which used to be a lake with a steamship on it, but just completely dried up because all the water was taken, so it wasn't refreshed. And this is now the worst and most dangerous source of pollutants in the atmosphere in the whole of the western United States. Just a kind of dry salt pan. Anyway, Owens Valley has got very spectacular and tall sides, and it's full of sediment itself, and the topographic difference from the very top to the very bottom of the valley might be something like 10 kilometres. So this is a huge, huge feature. So it has a huge, huge gravity signal as well, and here you can see the contour lines running along the valley edge, and the difference in gravity from the flank down into the basin is something like 100 milligals, so it's really quite big. And remember, this is the Bugue anomaly, so the effect of these mountains has been corrected away. So what we're looking at here is the gravity, you know, as though you'd kind of bulldozed all the topography away and it was completely flat. So this 100 milligal gravity anomaly is really there because this valley is filled with thick sediment, so the upper several kilometres it's just low density sediments, whereas underneath the foot of the mountains, you know, it's a metamorphic rock. So this is an example of totally the other end of the spectrum, so good to get a bit of variety in. This is the Pine Point lead zinc ore body in Canada. And if you look at the gravity profile that was measured over it, then this is 0 to 1 milligal. So this is a minuscule gravity anomaly. The entire anomaly is just 1 milligal. So obviously, in order to get the shape of the anomaly, you have to make measurements much less than 1 milligal. And it's amazing what's been achieved here. Here we have a little side lobe here, which has got an amplitude of about 0.1 milligals. And there are 3 or 4 points on each flank defining this. So these measurements have been made more accurate than 0.1 milligals. So if you remember from when you used the gravimeter and fiddling with the knobs here and trying to get repeatability, you'll realise how difficult it is. this 1 milligauss gravity anomaly has been modelled as is shown in the diagram underneath. And here we have good old North American units of feet. So 0, 100 feet, 200 feet, and here is the ore body. And this has been modelled as a zinc ore body, which is, goes down to about 120 feet or so, so that's about 40 metres. This is its extent. These are drill holes that have been drilled to check that this interpretation was correct. And obviously it's quite important to get this right, because this could be open cast mined, this valuable ore removed, and then it could be refilled again, landscaped. So there's an extremely valuable resource here which could be got fairly easily just without needing to have a subterranean mine. And here we have a oil pool. This is from the United States. So here we're seeing this pattern of nosing that I've mentioned before. We've got a very strong regional here. So obviously if you were interpreting it, the first thing you would do would be to assess what the regional is and subtract it. And this is typical of what you see. It looks as though this oil pool here, it's not the oil really that's giving the gravity anomaly, but the structure which is containing the oil. So it looks as though the feature of interest is not where the nose is, but that's typically what you see. And if you look very closely, you'll see that all gravity contours are bunched up just here. And if you compare it with the region over here, they're not bunched up here. So although it looks as though the gravity anomaly is here, and there isn't anything here, that's actually not the case. If you put a ruler on this and take a look, you'll see that the gravity anomaly starts about here. You start to deviate from the regional to either side, and you get to about there. Here we have a salt dome of the sort that we've seen before. You get a round bullseye anomaly. The amplitude is typically 5, 10, 15 milligauss, something like that. This one is in the Gulf of Mexico, and as you can see, it's not a perfect bullseye. So if you were studying this, if you were working for a company and studying this, you know, your boss would want an interpretation which explained why it wasn't a perfect circle here. And this is an interpretation that was placed on that. Here we have a salt dome, a kind of mushroom shape. And the gravity anomaly due to this modelled mushroom and a salt dome is not like that. This is the observed anomaly here, outlined in blue. And this is the anomaly due to the salt dome. So obviously there's some sort of shortfall here. The model salt dome shows a larger anomaly than the actual observed, and this was interpreted as high-density capping rock, which was holding the salt in. So this particular salt dome did not outcrop to the surface. You couldn't see any sign of it on the surface. So some impermeable cap rock was preventing the salt from rising up, because salt was low density and it rises in a diapir-like fashion. Okay, Long Valley Caldera. This is situated here. So here we have a little bit of information about the western United States. Here we have the San Andreas Fault Zone. I'm sure everybody knew that. San Francisco area is here. So the San Andreas Fault runs more or less slap bang through San Francisco. It runs out through a farming country down here, and when it reaches this point here, it sort of branches and goes further inland, and Los Angeles is here. This is the Garlock Fault. This is an active fault. And here we have a kind of triangular-shaped region here, fault-bounded. And this is the Owens Valley. The one over on the right-hand side, that's Death Valley. And there's a small one in the middle here called Panamint Valley. So there are these three really extreme normal fault-bounded subsiding rift zones. And as I say, some people think that the plate boundary is going to leave the San Andreas Fault Zone, and it's going to migrate over here. This is going to connect to the Gulf of California, which is down here. And there's going to be a new spreading plate boundary up here. And what's happening at the very tip of this is that there's a large volcano called Long Valley. And here we see some tectonic features. So the normal faulting, the normal fault bounding Owens Valley kind of runs up here into Long Valley. And here we have an elongate caldera. In the middle is a resurgent dome. And the most recent active volcanism occurs in this zone here. So we've got quite an interesting tectonic situation here, which people, some people have suggested explanations for it, but there's a lot that's not understood. So here we have faulting, which is forming a rift valley, and here we have extension, which is forming a dike-like feature and resulting in volcanic eruptions. So it's not quite clear why this rifting type extension changes to normal faulting extension just here. It's a puzzle. This shows the recent history of volcanism along this volcanic zone here. Here we have the present day and 5,000 years before present. So you can see that a lot of these little volcanoes here have erupted just in the last 1,000 years, and all of them have erupted in the last 5,000 years. So this is an active volcanic area. Long Valley Caldera formed about 750,000 years ago when there was something which was maybe not quite a supervolcano eruption, but getting on for that. There was a massive eruption which blew something like 600 cubic kilometres of rock up into the air. So it must have been a completely unbelievable sight. You wouldn't have disbelieved it for very long, of course, because you'd have quickly been dead if you'd been within view of it. And when the magma chamber had evacuated itself, formed this huge eruption plume, it then collapsed back down onto itself and refilled up the hole. So something like a 2 kilometre deep hole was blasted in the Earth's crust. It was then rapidly filled up by this collapsing ash cloud. And this is known as the Bishop's Tuff. And this is one outcrop that you can see not too far from the roadside, which is just a huge stack of volcanic ash. And you can see reverse graded bedding and things like that, which indicate that this happened. This little picture here shows the extent of the ash cloud over the western United States. So it covered almost the whole of the western part of the country. Something like 10 states were completely blanketed in ash from it. And there were huge pyroclastic flows extending all the way down the valley. This gives you some impression of the size of this eruption. This is the Great Huckleberry Ridge caldera eruption in Yellowstone, which occurred 2 million years ago. This really was a supervolcano eruption. So have any of you seen the film Supervolcano? Mm. Well, if you haven't seen it, you should watch it, because it's actually quite realistic. Supervolcano eruptions do occur, and if another one occurs in our lifetime, then there'll be a tremendous impact on the human race, which will make the Ebola crisis seem like nothing at all. If there's a supervolcano eruption in the world, then probably a huge proportion, maybe 90% or more of the human race will be wiped out. There's nothing we can do about it. But fortunately, they don't occur very often, two or three times in the Phanerozoic. But anyway, that's that. And this is where the Bishop Tuff fits in here. It's kind of about 20% of the Huckleberry Ridge eruption. And this is Mount St. Helens, which maybe you studied at school. I've seen pictures of that. Are they still teaching this at school? Mount St. Helens was quite spectacular, of course, because of the pictures that people had of it. And also the fact that everybody imagined volcanoes to erupt upwards, and Mount St. Helens blasted out sideways, and for some reason that it's difficult to understand afterwards, people didn't expect that at the time. Of course, some people say they did expect it, but they didn't, or else they wouldn't have put somebody on volcano watch right in the way of the blast. So here is Long Valley Caldera. This is the caldera rim, these mountains here. The this is a resurgent dome. So there are hot springs there, there's recent volcanic activity, there's a mountain-bounded caldera. And 20 years ago, people didn't believe this was a volcano here. And they were very annoyed with the US Geological Survey, who started kind of ringing alarm bells and saying this volcano has become activated, because they didn't want to hear that it was a volcano. And this caused real estate prices to drop. And there's no exaggeration. But what happened was it did become activated. And a large swarm, including several magnitude 6 earthquakes, occurred. These red ones here. And they had extremely unusual focal mechanisms, which suggested that they were due to dike opening and dike injections. This was accompanied by a swelling of the resurgent dome, and it started rising up. And there was quite a lot of panic, because Mammoth Mountain over here is a ski resort, and there was just one road leading into it, which is this road here. And people were afraid there'd be an eruption over here or maybe here, and then the road would be cut off and those people would be marooned because there's no way out of it. And sometimes there are 30,000 people skiing there at the weekends. So the department was involved in a large seismic survey of this area. Here we have the caldera. And here we have Mammoth Mountain with its ski resort, which was of particular interest. And the department got together with Duke University, North Carolina, which is happens to be situated in a town called Durham, funnily enough, and the US Geological Survey, and we deployed all of these seismic stations, which are indicated by diamonds here. A lot of earthquakes were recorded, and finally get around to gravity here. And what we're looking at here is the seismic wave speed structure, seismic velocity. So this is for 2 kilometres above sea level, so you're quite high up here. This is 1 kilometre above sea level. This is sea level, 1 kilometre below sea level. This is the caldera rim here. So we're looking at the kind of southwest portion of the caldera. And it was not possible to get an image of the whole caldera because there aren't earthquakes and the rest of it. They're just all concentrated around here. And the red shows low wave speed. And the blue shows high wave speed. So this was quite a successful piece of imaging, because you can see this low wave speed right up to the caldera rim here and here. So these low wave speed bodies, they fit quite nicely in the caldera. And the wave speed is high outside the caldera. And this is what you would expect, because the caldera is basically a hole full of rather low density material, this Bishop Tuff that collapsed back into it. And outside is the crystalline rocks of the Sierra Mountains. And this pattern is seen down several depth intervals. So one thing that hasn't yet been done with these data is to take the wave speed field and translate it into density, and then do gravity modelling. So can you remember which relationship enables you to do that?
Nave-Drake
curve. The Nave-Drake curve relates seismic wave speed, seismic velocity, to density. So in theory it would be possible to take this, divide the area into little boxes or whatever, and calculate the density distribution from this velocity distribution, and then calculate the gravity field from that. Okay, just a couple more slides, because this is such an interesting place. When the volcano was activated, this is Mammoth Mountain here, people noticed that trees started dying in patches. So this was actually first noticed that something was going on when a ranger came to make some measurements of something or other here. And because this area is all full of snow, the building that had the instruments in it was a kind of wooden building, maybe full from the size of this room, not very big. And it had a tower like a church steeple at one end, with a ladder down the inside, so it's like a huge chimney. And in the winter, when the snow was several metres thick, he would come along on his snowshoes, and he would just sort of scrape the snow away from this chimney, and he would climb down the chimney into this building and read the instruments there. The whole building was submerged in snow. And so he turned up to do this one day, and he started feeling very sick while he was doing it, and just felt terrible. And so he went back up the ladder, and he just managed with a great difficulty to struggle out onto the snow. And so people came, and then he recovered. And so they came back and investigated what was going on here, and they found that the whole building was full of carbon dioxide. So he was extremely lucky not to have died. And the outflow of carbon dioxide around the flanks of this volcano became so severe that all the trees started dying because their roots were deprived of oxygen. So, moving on to gravity. This is the Kubwe anomaly of the area, and there's no prize that's going to be given for spotting Long Valley Caldera here. It's a massive, massive low. This is all Sierra Mountains, crystalline material. You should all go there for holiday sometimes. This is a great holiday resort, lots of stuff to do, and it's in summer and winter, lots of hiking. So this is all crystalline rocks, lots of granite batholith outcropping, and here we have this massive hole in the crust, which was filled up by low-density Bishop Tuff. So people have studied it in great detail because, in particular, people want to know, is there a magma chamber under there? If so, how much magma does it have in it, and where exactly is it, and how deep, and so forth? Because this business, when the volcano became activated, it sucked up a tremendous lot of money. There were US Geological Survey geophysicists out there just constantly monitoring the expansion of the resurgent dome and monitoring earthquake activity. And there were a lot of experiments run with people like us and Duke University to deploy seismometers and do other extra measurements because there was an awful lot riding on it. Let's say this is a huge ski resort and lots of important people go skiing there. So the gravity people, of course, have done their best to contribute gravity modelling to the question of whether there's a magma chamber under there, and if so, how deep it is, and what we can say about it. So here's the complete Kubwe anomaly map. And they've done lots of different ways. You know, one thing they've done is to pre-process and display the data in many, many different ways to try to get some ideas as to what to model. So this is what it looks like with no terrain corrections. This is without terrain corrections, and that's with terrain corrections. So you can see the without looks much busier. And there are lots of little lows here, and maybe a few highs if you look hard enough. And basically what we're looking at here is the terrain. You know, you've got the imprint of the terrain superimposed on the effect of deeper bodies. So whereas if you do a gravity survey in a place like Britain, where the mountains are quite low, you know, you'll spend a lot of work doing your terrain corrections for each gravity point, and you may find that they're 0.1 milligal or something like that, and you wonder why you bothered, because it doesn't make much difference to your final model. Here, where the mountains are very high, and they're, you know, you might be going from plus 1 kilometre to minus 1 kilometre within your area of interest, they make quite a big difference. So we have an elongate gravity anomaly, kind of oval shape, and then there's this lobe on the side, somewhere near where Mammoth Mountain is, the ski resort. So people have tried low pass filtering it, so here we're just looking at the very longest wavelengths, and Long Valley pops out as the most remarkable anomaly if you do that. This is a high pass filtered. So in this, we're essentially looking at, you know, if there's any deep body there, we're looking at deep bodies. Here we're looking at shallow bodies because the deep material has been filtered out. So since you can see Long Valley in both of these, you know, this suggests that there may be a deep signal, a deep structure, as well as a shallow structure. This is the second vertical derivative of the Kubwe anomaly. So if you took the gradient, and then you took the gradient of that, this is what you would get. Obviously, this is not something you would do graphically, you would do this in a computer. So what we're seeing here is an extremely emphatic accentuation of the caldera rim. You can still see Mammoth Mountain down here. You can see some other anomalies here. So pull out a geological map and see what these are. If you remember, we talked about second vertical derivatives here, in the sense that you get a very large signal in the second vertical derivative if the feature you're looking at is shallow, and you get a smaller signal if the feature you're looking at is deep. So here we have the sedimentary basin type thing, and obviously this is what you'd expect for a long valley. You'd expect the caldera faults to slope inwards like this, so you've got something that's like a sedimentary basin. So we'd expect to see something like this with a very strong signal on the outside of the basin and a small signal on the inside. And if you look at the actual thing, then you do indeed see that this is what we see. So you can see that all the contour lines are bunched up very closely on the outside of the caldera, and then if you look at the inside of the caldera, they're more widely spaced. So indeed, we are looking at that situation. This is a free air anomaly map. So this is telling you whether there's excess mass or mass deficit at any point, basically steamrolling down all the topography to one level and looking at the integrated gravity effect of everything. So the caldera is much less obvious here, suggesting that it's compensated at depth, that the crust has regained its equilibrium. Directional filter doesn't help much. Upward continuation more or less does something similar to low pass filtering, where it shows you what the gravity would look like if it had been measured 5 kilometres up. So this would remove the effect of small scale shallow bodies and just leave you with the larger bodies, which could be due to deeper features. Contoured horizontal gradients, ridge crests on the horizon. I think this is the neatest myself, more or less outlines the caldera. So this is typically what people do. They plot all of these different things, and as you can see, different features appear in different maps. So sometimes something can become apparent in a map which you haven't actually noticed in the gravity field itself. And if you cast your minds back to the oil pool example I gave you, where you saw this nosing, if that nosing, of course, is pretty obvious, but if it hadn't been quite so obvious, you might have looked at that gravity map there and not thought there was any significant anomaly there. But by removing the regional, it pops up very strongly. And it's the same message here, really, that removing the regional is not the only thing that you can do. There are lots of things that you can do. There are computer programs set up so that once you've got your gravity data read in, you can just print out this suite of maps and take a close look at them and say, this shows up in this particular display form, what could that be? And it may give you ideas as to how to proceed further, because it's sometimes not obvious what to do when you get to the computer stage. You've got your gravity map here, and the model that you type into the computer is a function of what external studying you've done, what papers you've read, what maps you've looked at, what thoughts you've had, and then you type a model in and see if that model will fit the gravity data. But you could type lots and lots of different models in and you could still fit the gravity data. So it's important not only to do this kind of exercise, but also to study the structure and so forth, talk to geologists. God forbid we have to do that sometimes, you've got to start off close to the truth, or you'll never get to the truth just by fooling around with a computer. So this is a speculative structural cross-section of Long Valley Caldera. Here is Mammoth Mountain, carbon dioxide pouring out of the flanks. A skier was killed there a couple of years ago because he skied into a pole and lost consciousness, I think, for a short while, but unfortunately he rolled into a kind of dimple in the snow, which was full of carbon dioxide, and he just dead, even though he hadn't actually hurt himself badly by running into the pole. So still a little bit of CO2 hazard there. Here we have the Caldera faults, which in this speculative cross-section are drawn down to about 5 kilometres. And here we have post-caldera lavas and fill and Bishop tuff. So most of the caldera is filled with a very thick layer of Bishop tuff, and on top of that there's some sediment and stuff which has accumulated over the last three quarters of a million years. Here we have a basin material, which may be granitic, Sierra granite, something like that. Same material here. And here we have some congealed magma and inside a partially molten core. And people think that there may be a separate magma supply to Mammoth Mountain. You know, there should be lots and lots and lots of question marks on here, because we don't know that much. It may surprise you that we've done all this seismic topography and gravity and this and that and the other, and really this is still kind of up in the air. So the primary problem here that the Geological Survey is interested in is there a magma chamber, and if so, how deep and how big? Because there's this critical information for public hazard reduction. So what we're going to do, not in this series of practicals, but next term, we're going to spend 2 weeks investigating this using the gravity data. So I believe I've scheduled that for weeks 14 to 15, something like that. It's written down in your books. But you're given the data from Long Valley Caldera, and you'll be applying the methods that you've learned in this series of practicals, and that will refresh your minds of that after Christmas. So we've done a block of gravity now. In this coming practical, you'll finish off your gravity modelling, and then we'll move on to magnetics, and then we're going to revisit gravity again next term by taking this example and taking the data and seeing what you can find out about this magma chamber. So, let's take a 10-minute break, and the demonstrators will be up here with the magnetometers. So, I'm not sure how many people they'll want to take down in the first batch, but you'll need to be warmly dressed, because you'll be trotting over to the peninsula and doing a magnetometer survey behind the cathedral. So have a think about whether you want to do that this week or leave that to a future week. If no one volunteers, then you'll be press ganged.